First of all, I want to thank Bill and Martin for inviting me to come and share my experience with you. As Bill mentioned, I came from Montana. My husband and I live in Billings, Montana. We live there by choice. We love the mountains and love the recreation that's available to us there. Before I get into my actual experience, I want to let you know that before I gained a knowledge of IONS, I didn't really know that I had had a near-death experience. All that I knew was that my spirit had left my body and that I had been taken back to heaven, but I wasn't sick in a way that was terminally ill or I hadn't been in an accident. For me to find out that IONS exists has been a huge blessing for me because it's helped me to process some of my experience a little more, which I've done over the years since I had my experience. Where I came to be aware of IONS was a fellow author, Jeff Olson. We have the same publisher, and we were speaking one day and kind of comparing notes, and we shared our stories with each other because we knew that we both had had a near-death experience. And you notice I'm saying that I had a near-death experience now because that's kind of a new thing for me to say. I've only realized that my experience is also considered a near-death experience for about the last 9 months or so. So in conversing with Jeff, he said, you really need to be a part of IONS. They would be so helpful to you. You could be so helpful to them. And so here I am. I'm grateful for this opportunity that allows me to share with you, but then to converse with others that have had experiences that I can relate to. Because one of the things about a near-death experience is that when you're returned, your perspective changes so much that it's hard to share with a friend or a family member what happened to you in a way that you can really get some good feedback because they have no idea what you really, really went through. So as Bill mentioned, my husband and I have been happily married for 35 years now. We have 6 children, as he mentioned, 2 that we adopted from Russia, and there's some things that are really important to me now in my life that were important to me before my experience, but now are like I have to have those in my life to breathe important. And my family is one of them. Helping people understand health is one of them. And then helping people understand the truth about this life and how important and precious and vital what we do with our life is. And those are things that are really, really important to me. So back in about 2000, 2001, I started to become extremely depressed. Prior to that time, I had had several life experiences that had already taught me that God existed. My husband and I had had a visitation of our children before they were born. And then in 1992, I was instructed by God to find a son. And as a result of that instruction, my husband and I adopted that son and his sister from Russia. So it took me about 6.5 years from the time I was told to find my son until we brought the 2 children home from Russia. That whole experience was an experience that taught me not only the reality of God, but his love and concern for each of us. Now, I tend to be a typical American mother in that I know how to go, 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 and run, 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 and not take care of myself. I know how to be there for all the kids' games. I know how to be there for all the school events. I know how to run 2 businesses at the same time. And I know how to get by on little or no sleep. I know all of those things that a typical American woman knows how to do. Just before I was told to find my son, I began to have severe migraine headaches, and those headaches continued without ceasing 24/7. And by the time that I had those headaches for about 12 years, my body began to say, whoa, we have had enough, and you're not making it. You're not functioning anymore. Well, by that time, we had all 6 kids. We had brought the kids home from Russia. My 4 biological children were in their upper teens. A couple of them had graduated from high school, and life was really busy. And my husband and I were operating 2 businesses. And in addition to that, I was taking care of some other responsibilities that I had with our religious congregation. And life was just really busy, and I felt like I had to just keep going. Well, bodies are amazing things, and sometimes they tell us to settle down because we're not going to continue to function if you don't. I refused to listen to my body, and I dove straight into severe suicidal depression. All of a sudden, over a period of a few months, I decided that I was angry with the world and I didn't want to live. But I have been blessed, and I knew I had been blessed with this amazing husband that was my very best friend, and 6 children that I had a great relationship with. So I kept hanging on because of my family and their love for me and my love for them. Well, if any of you are familiar with depression, especially when you have severe depression, there tends to be triggers. And what those triggers do is if something, say if money is a trigger and you start having money problems, that can be a trigger. Or maybe contention is a problem and contention becomes one of your triggers. And so if you have a contentious teenager, that can be a trigger. Well, I had a day in the summer of 2002, and virtually all of my triggers went off that day. I became convinced that I was the largest albatross that the world had ever produced, and that it would be unfair of me to expect my husband and my children to have to live with me and my problems and the problems I was creating for them. Because some of the problems that I was creating was that I wasn't communicating how sick I was, and I wasn't able to function the way that I needed to. And when you're running 2 businesses and a large family, you need to function fairly well. And I knew I wasn't. And I knew that our businesses were beginning to fail because of me. After a few phone calls from less than kindly creditors, I decided that I could no longer go on. And so I got down on my knees that night and said my prayers. God had always been an important part in my life. I knew that God was aware of the struggles that I was having, and I knew that He loved me. I knew He was aware of me, and I explained to Him that the next day I would be taking action to end my life, and that whatever He did with me would be okay with me, because I knew that even if He sent me to hell, even if He sent me to the very worst place that a spirit could be sent, it couldn't be worse than what I was already going through. The intense physical pain that I was feeling as a result of my headaches, and the emotional pain that I was feeling because of the depression and because I knew I was failing my family, it just didn't matter what He was going to do with me. And so as I got on my knees that night, I didn't offer any apologies. I just told God, I said, "You know I have done the best that I can, and you know that I can't do any better. And so I hope to see you tomorrow." Now, I didn't do anything to actually end my life that night. My plan was that after everybody was gone from home the next day, then I would take my action. I got back into bed after I said my prayers, and I cried myself to sleep. And a short time after I had fallen asleep, I became aware of an angel who was beckoning to me, and he was reaching his arms to me. He grabbed my hand, and he pulled my spirit from my body. Now, my angel always made a point of keeping his face away from me. And so, as he pulled me from my body, he had my hand like this, and I was over here, and he just pulled me through this vast conduit. And we traveled through the conduit for what seemed not very long. But as we traveled through the conduit, I could see the walls of the conduit. I could see that they were clear, and yet they were defined in some way. I wasn't just traveling through space, but he pulled me through that conduit, and I watched the stars and the galaxies as they went by. Within a relatively short amount of time, we approached a complex, and this complex was full of rooms and hallways. And as we arrived at the complex, my angel beckoned to me and instructed me to look over at some classrooms to the right. And I watched those classrooms, and I recognized those classrooms, and I realized that I had been there before. And I understood that what I was seeing was a complex full of classrooms in which spirits were being instructed. And the kind of instruction that was taking place in those classrooms were not biology or history or things that you would learn in high school or college or anything like that. Instead, what was going on in those classrooms, we were being taught what certain experiences in life would be like. We were utilizing that instruction to prepare us to make decisions. We were going to be making decisions on what kinds of experiences we were going to have in our lives. And the whole intent of those classrooms was not just to instruct us about what certain life experiences would be like, but we were really carefully paying attention and using God as a resource, but also using the expertise of those who were teaching us. And our whole intent was to pick and to choose those experiences that were going to best prepare us and enable us to become like God. And so as I watched those classes and watched things that were familiar to me and watched instructors and rooms that were familiar to me, I realized that they weren't making decisions like we would make here. It wasn't about, I get the Mercedes and you get the Ford, I get the mansion and you get the shack. It was, I'll have migraines, you'll have heart problems, you'll have a really difficult kid, I'll grow up in a house that challenges me. And all of those experiences were being chosen for their propensity to teach us. And we were taking it really seriously. And I watched those rooms, and I was enthralled with what I was seeing. And then my angel gestured for me to look in a room that was to my left. And as I turned and looked at that room, I immediately recognized the individual who was in that room. And I should tell you that as I watched this complex and saw into these classrooms, I could see through the walls. Looking through the walls was not a physical barrier for me. It was almost as though the walls just disappeared or melted away as I watched. And so as I looked at the room to the left, it was not a classroom. The individual who was in that room was extremely familiar to me, and I recognized him from his outline immediately. And the individual that I saw was God. I was so surprised at how well I knew his outline. And as I watched him, I could see that he was looking out towards the door of that room and watching the hallway that was just outside of that room. He was watching two individuals approach the door of that room, and anticipating that they were coming to the door, he began walking to the door and was approaching it to open it for those two individuals. As I watched that scenario and watched him open the door and greet those two individuals, I recognized them. One was me, and the other was my husband, Greg. Only in that realm, in that sphere of existence, he was not my husband. But we were coming for a meeting. And as I watched us enter the room, it was almost as though I broke away from watching that, and the barrier over my memory was removed. And I was allowed and able to see everything that had been a part of my existence there. And my existence there was not just a few years. I don't know that I had been in that complex for eons of time, but what I was allowed to remember did span eons of time. And honestly, I'm not sure that it's even fair to call it time, because time there is not like time here. It's not the same at all. So I watched and saw and remembered everything that had been a part of my existence there. And I was blown away. I was amazed at me. I was amazed at everything there. The devotion, the love, the intelligence. I like to think, as a mortal being, that I'm relatively intelligent. I realize I'm not a genius, but I like to think that I'm capable of having intelligent conversations. What I knew there, what I understood there, was far beyond anything that I understand here. And there was a atmosphere of confidence. I had confidence in my abilities, and I didn't question my abilities. And instead of comparing each other, we honored each other. We honored our strengths, and we recognized how individual we were, that each of us had been blessed by God with different gifts, different talents, different abilities, different weaknesses. But nobody was ever condemned for their weaknesses or their differences. Instead, we were all applauded by each other for our gifts and for our efforts. And nobody was expected to be like someone else. We were only expected to be who we were. As I watched all of that play out, it was not lost on me the difference between how I viewed myself there and how I viewed myself here. And I saw how much reverence and love and devotion I had for God, and how important He was, and how great the work was that was going on there that was preparing us for this world. And I watched a great meeting take place there. And I can't tell you exactly what the meeting was, other than it had incredible eternal significance. I watched as a sort of debate was taking place. Arguments were being made, pro and con. And on one side, those who were making the arguments were supporting a plan that God had made, had presented. And on the other, opposing arguments were being made. Probably you won't be surprised to know that those who favored and who were arguing for God's plan won because we're here. But I understood that the individuals that I was watching prepare in those classrooms had been part of those who had joined in those arguments and who had defended God and who had placed their confidence in Him.
I was so grateful to watch and to see the efforts that had been made there, and so grateful that I had been able to be a part of that as well. So as I watched that experience, my angel had to get my attention again. Apparently, I had watched for too long and become too engrossed in what was being shown me. And he directed me to turn my attention back to the room where God was and where Greg and I were being greeted. And so I turned my attention back and saw again Greg and I enter the room. As I watched us enter the room, I was able to watch it with my angel, but then I began to experience it again as it had played out originally. As we entered the room, God embraced me and welcomed me to the room and thanked me for coming to meet with him. Somehow, I was able to know, even though it was not explained to me in that room, that Greg already knew and had an understanding of what the meeting was about. I knew that he and God had already had discussions, and that for reasons I wasn't sure of, that Greg had given his permission for me to be asked to take this assignment. The one thing that I knew before I actually had this sit-down meeting with God was that the time had already been planned when Greg and I would be born, when we would come to this world. And it had already been planned that we would be together on this earth. Why, I'm not sure, other than maybe it was a reward because I really love this guy that's here in this room. And I loved him there too. And he was one of my dearest and closest friends there. So as we entered the room, there was just two high back chairs in the room. And they were positioned. Can I use your chair as an example? No, stay there, stay there. If this was one chair, the other chair was positioned just like this, close to it, so that we were very close in proximity. And so God gestured for me to sit in the chair here. He motioned for Greg to stand behind me, and he sat in this chair. And as we sat, he grasped my hands very gently. And Greg began to massage my shoulders. And I knew that was a clue. He was cueing me that something important was really about to happen. And he was reassuring me that it would be okay. Now, in that realm, it's hard to explain, but fear and anxiety were not really part of that realm. It wasn't typical or common to have those kinds of emotion. Confidence, love, intelligence, just knowing that you could, especially as long as God was supporting you in your effort, that's what was a part of that existence there. So as God gently grasped my hands, he looked into my face, and I looked into his. And for a few moments, I have what I called a mortal moment, in that as I looked into his face, I did it as though I were me right now. And as I looked into his face, that face that I knew and I loved so dearly, I could not believe that I had ever been able to forget that face. I couldn't believe that I had ever been able to forget everything that I was experiencing there. And I realized that the block over my memories, the barrier that was put in place was not just a thin barrier. It was more like stainless steel. For me to be able to look in his face and know it and recognize it and be so familiar with it, and then as a mortal to not have a clue what he looks like, I knew how incredibly strong that barrier was. And I knew that a huge part of what was supposed to be important in this earth was developing faith, relying on God, and serving my personal mission, serving our personal missions, without any validation that he was there supporting us, was going to be really important. I still completely don't understand that concept of why. I just know it was. So he began explaining to me that he had a very important assignment that he was asking me to make and to take and to accept. He thoroughly described to me what it was I was being asked to do. And he explained to me that it would not be easy. And then he gestured and directed me to look back through the conduit that my angel had brought me through. And the only way that I can really describe what I then saw, have any of you ever used Google Earth where you, it's like the satellite starts out way here and then within a short amount of time you can zoom in until you can like see your house on Earth? Well, that's sort of what it was like. It was that as he showed me through the conduit my life, even though I was sitting there with him, I could see through that conduit and see my life as it was going to play out, as though it was only 20, 40 feet away. And I watched my life, and I watched and saw everybody who would be a part of it, all the experiences that would be a part of it, everything that I was supposed to do, with the understanding that everything that I was watching and everything that I was being shown was what would happen if I relied on God and his direction. And that if at any time I rejected him or rejected his guidance or started making choices contrary to the choices that would need to be made, what I was seeing was not what would play out in my life. After he completed showing me my life on earth, I was as close to panicked as I think I ever felt in heaven. I wanted so badly to succeed and to do for God everything and anything that he wanted me to do. I don't know what I saw of my life, because I no longer can remember that. I wasn't allowed to remember that. But there was something that I saw there that deeply troubled me, and I was afraid that I was going to fail. And as I had those thoughts, God was able to read my mind, and he knew my thoughts, and he reassured me, and he told me that he knew what he was asking me to do would be difficult, and that it would be very hard, and that at times I would not be able to fill him with me, but that he would never leave me, that he would never, ever leave me, and that as long as I remembered him, and as long as I turned to him for answers, I would succeed. So I thought about it a little bit longer, and he reassured me again, and he reminded me that he loved me and that as long as I remembered him, that I would succeed. And I realized, because of my knowledge of him, and I knew that as we were preparing to come to this world, none of us were being prepared to fail. All of us were extensively being prepared to succeed. And at that moment, I knew that I would accept the assignment. And I told him that I would accept the assignment. And he squeezed my hands and told me that I had made the right decision. And he thanked me for making that decision. And he expressed his love for me. After that, he then nodded to Greg and let him know that the meeting was concluded. And we got up to leave the room. And at that point, I was taken back to my body. I don't have any memories of going back through the conduit. I only remember being back in my body and realizing what had just happened. And as I entered my body, there was just something about me that I was really hopeful. I thought, okay, I've left my body. I've had this amazing experience. I can't wait to be back in this body that will be healed and will be better and 100% whole again. Well, it wasn't. I returned to the same body I left, the body that was still depressed, the body that was still suffering from 24/7 migraines. But I had been armed with an incredibly deep understanding of how precious this life is, how important this life is, knowing whatever it was, that I had a mission that I had accepted and that was mine to fulfill. And so I hung on, even though many, many days I didn't want to. One of the things after I returned to my body that continued to kind of make me wonder was my angel. I knew that my angel loved me. I knew that he knew me. But he always seemed to make a point of gesturing different places, but never making face-to-face contact with me. So I made that a matter of prayer several months after my experience. And I asked God, who was this angel that loved me so much, that had taken me back to him? And I was immediately answered that my angel was my grandpa. This grandpa, by that time, of course, was deceased, but had literally been a father figure to me. I had spent many hours and days and summers with he and my grandma. He and my grandma had been the ones who, as a little girl, had taught me about God, had taught me about how important God was and how real God was. And then it made sense to me why he had never brought attention to himself. Because if any of you are familiar with what it's like to see a spirit, you know that our spirits do not age, that we appear to be about 30 years of age, around about that. And so his age was no indicator to me of who he was. But it certainly became an important part of that experience for me to realize that had he brought attention to himself, he knew that I would have never paid attention to anything else that God needed to have me see and re-experience and know and understand in order to come back to my body and fight for my life. And this is not really a part of my near-death experience, but a few months after my near-death experience, God intervened in my life again through my husband. My husband felt very strongly prompted that he needed to go back to school, and he was directed, literally, by God, to go back to school and become a chiropractor. Now, our children were not children anymore at this point in time. My husband was about 45 years of age at that point in time, more the age when you're looking to retire. You know, you're thinking more about retiring than starting back to school and initiating another career. But because he did that, we were able to find the answers and find the reasons behind my headaches. And I am now able to be well and whole and able to fulfill my missions that I believe that I accepted when I had that meeting with God. That's my experience. I appreciate you coming and letting me share that with you.
In your experience, you mentioned that long, long ago in a time far, far away, we chose between one plan and the other. I heard you say one's plan was God's plan. What was the other plan?
I'm not sure. When I returned to my body, a lot of the specifics that I was allowed to see there was blocked again. I believe, because of my personal beliefs, not because I still actually remember, that plan that was in opposition to God's plan was Satan's plan.
How long did it take you to get physically and emotionally better?
Well, it was about 15 years before I was able to resolve the headaches. Once I was able to find the cause of the headaches and remedy that, it probably took another 2 years for my body to recuperate.
You indicated that your husband is here tonight.
Yes.
Could you introduce him?
Sure. This is my husband, Greg Oblander. And my best friend.
By chance, can you tell me what was the cause of your headaches?
I can tell you the cause of my headaches. It was MSG. So can I say that I am a huge proponent against MSG?
Thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. Not to take away anything from the great artistic efforts of so many people who have painted a picture of God or Christ, many people have mentioned that his image is nothing like any of the pictures that you've seen, but some of them approach that. Do you still remember what he looks like, and have you seen any pictures that even closely resemble him?
Well, let me just preface that by saying that most of the pictures that I see on earth are of Jesus. The God that I met with was not Jesus. Okay, so there's not really a lot of pictures of God. But having said that, the scriptures say that if you've seen one, you've seen the other. So my personal belief, again, is that they probably strongly resemble each other. And most of the pictures that I see of Jesus do not look very similar. I don't remember the face. I could not recreate it if I were describing it to an artist. But there are a few pictures that when I have seen them, I have known that I was seeing a face that was very similar.
Do you remember the color of the eyes?
Honestly,
I don't remember much of colors there.
Can you share with us your experiences of visitation of your children before they were born?
What happened was that about 3 months after my husband and I were married, as we knelt on our knees to have prayer that night, five spirits entered the room. And what my husband saw and what I saw is just a little bit different. We saw the same things, but he saw more than what I saw. I saw, as we were kneeling at our bed, the four children at the end of our bed and the fifth male spirit over by the doorway of our bedroom. And my husband is more in tune with these things than I tend to be. And our four children, our biological children, stood at the end of our bed in the order that they would be born. Well, our oldest is a girl, and then it's boy, boy, girl. That's how our biological children were born. And so as I looked at these spirits, I'm thinking, who is this? I wondered if maybe it was deceased grandparents or what, and I wasn't sure who the fifth male spirit was. I assumed that maybe he was an escort, but there were no words spoken. We just saw them, and when it was over, we kind of hesitantly approached each other and, did you see? And we started describing to each other what we saw, and we had seen the same thing, but my husband actually saw them enter the room. I only saw them once they were there in front of us, and my husband said, do you know who that was? And I said, no, do you? And he said, yes, those were our four children. And the moment he told me that, I knew in my heart that what he just told me was true, and I looked at him and I said, why do you think that we were allowed to see them? He says, I don't know. Well, our oldest daughter was born 2 weeks after our first wedding anniversary. So apparently timing was really critical there. but it wasn't until 1992, the year that I was told that I had a son and that I must find him, that we understood who the fifth male spirit was, and that was the spirit of our son, Andrew. I still don't totally know why we were allowed to see them, but I believe that in part it was to help us understand that they were going to come to us in different ways, but also I feel that as a family we have a mission to accomplish.
Since your visit, have you found life easier in the sense that you understand that basically life here is in a classroom and you signed up for these lessons? Have you found it important to impart that knowledge to your children when they become frustrated that the understanding is their support, but this is something that you signed up as a family since you've obviously have been connected to them since before you arrived?
Well, yes and no. What I have found is that there are certain things about life that are much easier for me. I don't get as frustrated with the trivial things of life. You know how when you're first married and you have to pick up after your husband, it's like, oh my gosh, will he ever pick up his socks? You know, kind of thing. Now it's like, honey, you can leave all the socks you want. I don't care because I love you and I know how amazing you are. And I saw you in heaven and you are awesome. And so there are things that really don't bother me now that maybe at one time did. But then there are other things that really bother me more. When I see somebody be really casual about life and not attribute a lot of importance to their life, or even want to put themselves down. I'm not important. I don't matter. I never will. I just really want to go up and shake them and say, no, do you know how important what we're doing is here? And I just want to kind of wake everybody up and say, come on, come on, come on. We've got things to be doing here. So some things are much easier and some things are harder.
You mentioned that you have a couple of businesses that you're doing now, and are you working them with your husband, and do they pertain to the fact of your, or in other words, are you kind of like a spiritual advisor to people? Is that part of your business world that you're tied into helping people, advising them, etc.?
I don't know that I really consider myself a spiritual advisor in the sense of doing one-to-one spiritual advising. When I had the experience we were running two businesses, I guess in a sense I'm kind of doing two businesses again, but I helped my husband in his office. He's now a chiropractor. He went back to school and he graduated.
So he's still practicing?
He is, yeah. He's practicing and I help him. I oversee the operations of his office, which will in 1 week be two offices. But in addition to that, I feel very driven to support the work that my book is meant to do, which is to help people understand the reality of God, to understand the importance of determining what our personal missions are and accomplishing them. What I've decided to call myself, if you will, is a guardian of truth. And what I mean by that is that I witness some profound truths in heaven that aren't necessarily known or acknowledged here on earth. And I think people need to know how precious we are and what we do is, and that we don't have to be president of the United States or world famous or anything that has anything to do with notoriety to fulfill our missions. Sometimes the very most important thing we can do is the really fun things, like take our grandchild in our lap and tell them how much we love them. You know, sometimes that's the very most important thing we can do.
I was just curious to know how long you had depression and if you were able to learn the cause above and beyond the obviously very difficult experiences that you were having. Did you learn a physical cause, or did you learn anything more about the depression?
Well, since that time, I have studied extensively about health, nutrition, and the like because of my own personal experiences with health. I had depression probably for 4 or 5 years. It dissipated very quickly once my headaches were gone. I believe that a large portion of my depression was attributable to the intense pain I was suffering every day. But also since that time, I have studied the works of various individuals such as George Watson, who has been able to determine that minerals in our diet, or lack of, can be a huge source of mental health issues. And I think that the stress I was under, that contributed just a lot of different things. But I think the stress, being mineral deficient, which I know I was, and then just the intense pain were the main contributors for me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are you aware of any gifts that you came back with? Are you more psychic now, or you look at somebody and know what their mission is?
I don't think I really am more psychic. I think I'm more, I don't know exactly how to describe this. I think I'm more aware of the gifts that I already had. I think I had several spiritual gifts prior to that. Now I am more aware, I recognize them more, and I think I also make more deliberate effort
to develop those gifts, because I think there's something that you don't just, I think you're given those gifts to a degree, but then I think that you can take those gifts, you know, it's kind of like being, having a propensity for music. You can have that musical gift, but then you've got to take that gift and develop it more.
Tell us how supportive your children are. Are they understanding and believing and supportive?
Well, that's an interesting question. My four biological children are very understanding and very supportive, and are some of my, I don't necessarily want to call them my best friends in addition to my husband, but they really kind of are my best friends, and they're a terrific support network. Our two adopted children have a disorder called reactive attachment disorder. If any of you are foster adoptive parents, and their issues are very significant, and they've pretty much rejected everything, including family.
Could you explain a little bit about that disorder?
I can. When an infant reaches that age, that's typically what, about 6 to 8, from about 6 to 8 months to maybe as old as 18 months, where you see them start to be really clingy to mom or their primary caretaker, there's a developmental process that needs to occur. When you see an infant and they're being really clingy to mom, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to drive us crazy because they won't go to anybody but mom, be really grateful for that, because that is a huge, wonderful developmental process for an infant. And what happens with that is certain areas of their brain then are developed, and they learn to trust, and they learn that somebody is there for them and that they will take care of them. With children who have been neglected or have not had the care that they need, those areas of their brain do not develop appropriately, and instead they operate from their brain stem. They're always in fight or flight mode, and they learn that they want to be in control. Unfortunately, their ways of control are not what we typically think of as control. It's not like, I'm going to boss you around and you're going to listen. They will use anger. They will use failure. They will use a lot of different modalities, if you will, or methods to try to control the world around them, but they're particularly afraid of developing loving, reciprocal relationships, and they don't want to be vulnerable. And as we all know, if you're going to love somebody, you're going to be vulnerable. You're setting yourself up for the potential that you might be hurt. They refuse to do that, especially with their, what they call their primary caregiver, which is usually the mom. The mom usually becomes a victim, and they target the mom for proving that they're unlovable.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our daughter in Texas is working with foster children and wanting to adopt because she's been unable to have more children. She just has one who's type 1 diabetes. So she's afraid of losing him, and so she's looking for more children. Things that you've said are a little frightening for me, because was there anything you could do to prevent this process or help these kids?
If I could have given birth to them.
Yeah.
If I had given birth to them, I would have taken care of them.
So it's just not a...
Well, our children were 4 and 9 when we finally found them. And we, of course, found them in Russia. I think that's been mentioned. And they had been removed from their biological parents for neglect and abandonment. So they were pretty primary, typical situations for the reactive attachment. And it is a huge problem with foster and adoptive children. So I would tell you to tell your daughter to really study it, to really know what she's getting into. When we adopted, we did not know that such a thing as reactive attachment disorder existed. So we kind of learned through the school of hard knocks, if you will. But since that time, there are
many individuals throughout the country who are aware of the issues that present themselves with these children, and there's a lot of significant work that's taking place that can be helpful. It's not a one-size-fits-all type of situation. Each child has to be evaluated for their needs and sub-issues, if you will, that can be a part of reactive attachment disorder. So she would just need to be smart and study and be aware of what she's walking into.
Regarding what you said about the two things that are really important to you, truth and what we do with our life, that we not treat it casually, can you elaborate a little more as to what truths you remember from your experience that you brought back with you, and what should we be doing with our life?
Well, that's an individual matter as far as what you should be doing with your life. I think as far as the truth is concerned, I want people to know that God is real and that He is totally and completely and unconditionally perfect. What I saw of me there was amazing, but I wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. When I saw God, He was perfect. Completely, utterly, totally perfect. And in regards to how important this life is, I would want everyone to know that this life has an incredible purpose, whether it's that we're here for 4 days or whether we're here for 104 years, we all have some mission, whether it's one or multiple, and my assumption is that all of us probably have more than one, because I think for all of us, our family and loved ones have got to be a mission. That's of primary importance as far as I'm concerned. And the rest, as far as our personal missions are concerned, I think is a matter of soul searching, paying attention to your passions. If you have a passion for art, I would pay attention to it. If you have a passion for music, I would pay attention to it. If you have a passion for teaching, I would pay attention to it. So for me specifically, sharing those truths, helping, I hope to eventually be able to construct a facility to help children with RAD. I also have a large passion for health in all of its forms, whether it's emotional, physical, spiritual. So,
you mentioned nothing about spiritual leaders. People are, I wondered if you had found a religious affiliation.
If I have a religious affiliation, yes. I do. I'm Latter-day Saint.
I see.
I'm curious, Joe. You recognized your husband, and so that was before you both came to this earth.
Right.
I'm curious to know whether you recognize or at times come across people that you met on the other side, and if you know them at that point, or if you can feel that you met them, but not on this earth?
Not really. Although I was allowed to see a lot of people, it wasn't, and I'm paraphrasing because I know there really isn't such thing as a typical near-death experience, but it wasn't a situation where I was allowed to, say, meet deceased family members. I was allowed to remember that existence, but so much of that has been blocked again from my memory that I could have seen people. I often will see somebody that's, you know, you just kind of seem to have a bond or a tie with. I have no memory of having seen them. Thank you.